Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and earned a communications degree from Central State University. He took a job in broadcasting to pay his way through law school. After 4 years of being a news anchor in St. Louis, he joined Fox 2 WJBK News as senior anchor. The winner of 2 Emmys, we listen to him each night and on Thursday nights with Let It Rip. His name, Huel Perkins. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the senior anchor of Fox 2 WJBK News, the legendary Huel Perkins. Huel, welcome, an honor.
Jack, it is so, so wonderful to be here. Let me tell you that you're one of my heroes. I tell you, you are one of my heroes, and I'm so happy to be with you.
Keep it up, keep it
That's
up.
That's true.
You're an only son.
Only child.
You grew up during segregation in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Huel Perkins, how did you get here?
I was blessed, Jack, to have wonderful, wonderful parents and wonderful examples of humanity and perseverance in my life. My father and mother are great, great people, and thank God they're still with us today. My dad's 85, my mom's 83. But yes, I grew up during segregation. I sometimes refer to it as affirmative action for white people. But I grew up at a time when it was against the law in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for me to check out a book from a public library. I could only go to movie theaters on weekends, and then I had to sit in the balcony, even though I paid the same price. I couldn't buy a suit from a department store. If I tried it on, it was mine. I couldn't go to see a doctor except on Wednesdays or Thursdays. And sometimes to see a dentist, I had to wait with my mother in a closet until the dentist was ready to see us. And all of that changed, though, in my lifetime. And as bad as that was for me, I was still blessed because I had a mom and dad who never allowed me to feel less than, always better than or equal to anybody or anyone I met. A dad who said, "That's okay, Chipper," that was my nickname, "if they won't let you check out the book from the library, we'll buy the book." So I had just a wonderful, wonderful mother and a wonderful father. And look, as tough as it was for me, it was harder on them. I always tell the story of my father, who graduated from Southern University in 1947. At the time, he and my mother both applied to grad school at LSU, Louisiana State University. My father and mother had great grades, excellent test scores, but they were still denied admittance to LSU because of the color of their skin. Well, amazingly, so that Louisiana could avoid the perception of being too racist, they said, "Well, look, we will send you, Huel Davis Perkins, my father, and Thelma Davis Perkins, my mother, outside of Louisiana. We will send you to Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, outside of Chicago, and we will pay your tuition. Not your room and board, but we'll pay your tuition so that although you're qualified to go to grad school at LSU, we'll send you to grad school at Northwestern University." Little did they know that would come back to haunt them, because my father and mother both got their master's degrees at Northwestern. My father went on to get his PhD, and 30 years later, he returned to LSU to become vice chancellor. He eventually ran the school that denied him admittance in 1947. And that's the kind of example I had in my life, and that's why I'm here.
He's 85. He just retired for the third time.
Exactly. He keeps retiring. They keep calling him back. Every time he's trying to retire, there's been some problem, some fundraising effort, something that they need to solve. And so LSU continues to call him back. But it's wonderful. He has a wonderful life. As he jokes with me all the time, "I still know who I am and where I am." So things are going pretty well.
What's the biggest things, Huel, you learned from your mom?
My mom was just the kindest person that I think I've ever met. She taught me through example that the measure of a man is how he treats his family, and that the bottom line is that we are all members of the same family, and that we must all treat each other with dignity and respect and honor and care. From my parents, my mother, I saw the examples of compassion and caring in the way that she would buy food for the poor families in the neighborhood down the block. I saw love in how she and my father looked at each other. I saw how important it is, too, to be prepared. My mother, I don't know how she did it, but both my parents had to work. Even though I was an only child, but both my parents had to work to give us the kind of life that we wanted. And my mother would get up every morning at 5 a.m., prepare breakfast for us, get me ready for school, and get us off to school, and then go to work herself. She was a music teacher in the elementary schools, first in the segregated system, and then eventually in the integrated system in East Baton Rouge Parish Public Schools.
What, Hugh Perkins, what did you want to be when you were a youngster?
Jack, I remember when I was 5 years old, I wanted to be a bullfighter. I saw a bullfight on television, and I said, oh, yeah, the cape, the costumes, I'm going to fight the bull. 5 years old. That didn't last too long when I realized that, you know, people could get hurt, and the bull ended up dead, so I didn't like it so much anymore. But eventually, I think I gravitated toward something that had to do with public speaking. I wasn't the greatest athlete. Didn't throw a ball well. Wasn't too coordinated. So I eventually gravitated into forensics in high school, into the debate team. And I got pretty good in debate. And from that, I decided to go into communications once I got to college. Now, I wasn't sure where that might lead, but I knew that I had to do something that put me before people.
We're talking to Hugh Perkins, and his first job out of college was in banking. When we come back, we'll ask him how he went from banking to talking. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with the host of Let It Rip, Hugh Perkins. Hugh, how did you go from banking to broadcasting?
It was a strange, circuitous route that I took. First of all, I took the banking job because it was the first job that opened up. I just graduated from college. I needed a job. The bank said, come on in. And so I started off as a clerk, and I eventually became head of the transit department. And people who know anything about banking know that years ago, before the advent of the computers that we use today, we used to have to actually physically process the checks that were written on a daily basis and balance the bank's accounts. And that's what I did every night to be sure that the accounts balanced and that the checks were processed and were sent to the Federal Reserve in New Orleans. And I did that for about, I'd say, 2.5 years. But all the while, I was thinking, banking is nice, it pays the bills, but this isn't what I was meant to do. And so I decided to go to law school. And in part, that's in my blood too, Jack. My grandfather, my father's father, was an attorney in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And my father, who became a college professor, kind of dissuaded me from going into law initially, because he said, look, I grew up with that, with my father. All you get all day is people coming to you with problems. Do you really want that? I said, well, Dad, you know, but it's interesting. I think I can do a lot of things with a law degree. So I ended up going to law school. That put me in contact with a wonderful person by the name of Cyril Vedder, who became my mentor. Cyril was an attorney who also owned a television station. And Cyril said to me, look, you go to law school during the day and you work for me at night at the TV station. When you graduate, you can become the station attorney. I'll go to Florida, collect the checks, you run the station. I said, hey, that's wonderful, fantastic. It was a great opportunity. I wasn't paid very much at all. But again, I was allowed to go to law school during the day and work, make a living at night, essentially doing the news. Little did I know that there were people, headhunters, who traveled the country and taped you. Somebody taped me on the air and sent my tape to St. Louis. And the next thing I know, I get a call. I'm in my senior year of law school. Number one in the class, by the way. Number one in my law school class. Senior year of law school, I get a call from St. Louis. Some guy named Steve Antonetti wants to fly down and offer me a job. We want you to anchor the news in St. Louis. I said, well, thank you very much, but I'm about to become a lawyer. He says, do you understand how much you could make here? I said, well, he flew down, took me out to dinner. The proverbial, numbers on a napkin. He pushes it to me and says, this is how much you'll make the first year. And it paid for all of my law school, all 3 years, everything. Every bill I ever had, it would be paid in a year. So I tried to, of course, look at it. Well, that's very interesting, Mr. Antonetti, but I hope you realize that I may try this for 1 year, but if I don't like it, I'm going back to law. And he said, look, if I don't like you, I'm going to fire you in a week. So what does it matter? And that offer brought me to St. Louis. Steve Antonetti was hired as the GM, vice president, WJBK here in Detroit, and the next year he brought me with him to Detroit. That's how I landed here. 1989, December 1st, 1989.
21 years later.
I tell you, I never thought I would be here 20 years. That's a long time in broadcasting. But it was fun. It was amazingly fun. And I came here to do the noon news. My first partner was Sherry Margolis. And Huell Perkins and Sherry Margolis did the noon news. And we had a great time. And to this day, we are wonderful friends.
There is no typical day in your business, but take us through a typical day.
Typical day. I arrive about 3, 3:30. I will go into a meeting where we will discuss the dozen, two dozen, three dozen, sometimes 50 stories that we will possibly air or cover in the 90 minutes we have between 5 and 6:30. We will discuss which stories we want to lead with. We will discuss which reporters will cover those stories. Sometimes I'll bring ideas. Sometimes I'll just sit and listen. Sometimes I won't go to those meetings at all because sometimes I'll be there and they'll say, you've got to get on the air right now because there's a breaking story. But that's the wonderful thing about news. You never know what's going to happen. At any given moment, any given day, some event may change the course of time. And you have to be prepared. I always like to say that if you're a newsman, you have to know something about everything. You don't have to be an expert. You have to know something about everything so that you will be able to discuss it intelligently and coherently on the air if you have to.
You've said that your job is to, quote unquote, uncover the truth. There's a lot of crooks out there that are very good at hiding. How do you uncover the truth?
You uncover the truth, first of all, by persistence, and secondly, too, by establishing a rapport even with the people that you will eventually uncover as possibly a liar or a thief. That's part, I think, of the skill of interviewing. You mentioned Let It Rip. It has become a hugely popular segment on the 10 o'clock news, in part because you hear things from people in the news that you never thought you would hear. You hear them speaking in ways you never thought you would hear them speak about matters that many people thought were private. And that's how you get to the truth. I find that establishing a rapport, even with the people that I intend to investigate, even with the people I am investigating, is important to get to the truth. It's in a sense like the police do when they question you and they bring the suspects in. They don't immediately ask the suspect, where were you on the night of August 22nd at 9 p.m.? They establish a rapport first, and that allows the door to open to the truth.
That was the secret to Columbo, right? Your dog Bowser. One or two examples about the unexpected with Let It Rip.
Well, I think the biggest has been the revelations that we've heard from Sam Riddle. Let It Rip sort of began in the wake of the sex and tech scandal involving former Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick. And Sam Riddle became a frequent guest because of the inside knowledge, the truth as sometimes unsavory as it might have been, the inside knowledge that he would bring to the discussions. However, as time went on, it also became apparent that Mr. Riddle was himself under investigation by the FBI. That did not stop him because of our rapport. That did not stop him. Even though he was under investigation, that did not stop him from appearing on Let It Rip. And in certain situations, admitting his relationship with then-Councilwoman Monica Conyers in ways that no one else was able to reveal. Now, the case is still pending. We don't know how it will eventually turn out. But we uncovered many of the facts that eventually appeared in court. Most recently, we uncovered those facts months ago on Let It Rip.
Sam Riddle, what's he like off air?
Off air? He is an intelligent, I like to call it an intelligent person. He's sort of like the lovable scoundrel. You know he's up to something, but you're not quite sure what it is. You know he's involved in something, but you're not quite sure it's illegal. But you know he's in there somewhere. He knows where the bodies are buried across this city. He may have buried some of them himself. I don't know. But he is someone, though, who believes in his own mind that he is simply doing what any lobbyist would do in the country. He has mentioned to me several times that more money changes hands in Washington, D.C. and in Lansing than changes hands in Detroit, that lobbyists spend hundreds of millions of dollars in an effort to influence legislation in this country and also in the state of Michigan. And he contends that he was simply doing that as part of his job to influence legislation and the outcome of policy.
We're talking to Huell Perkins, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Huell Perkins, the winner of two Emmys and many, many, many awards. Huell, on the national broadcasting scene through the years, what one or two men did you most admire?
Well, let me mention first another mentor, a man I admire greatly and still do to this day, and that is Emory King. Now, Emory King was a national White House correspondent for NBC News. And when I arrived in Detroit, one of the first people I called was Emory King. And he was so gracious and welcoming. And he really helped me learn the city of Detroit. I'll always appreciate his kindness. But I joke with him, I used to watch Emory King on TV when I was a kid. So he always inspired me, and I think that he is just one of the greats, and I'm sorry that he's no longer on the air. I wish that he were. But in addition to Embry, of course, I admire Tom Brokaw. I got a chance to meet Tom Brokaw many years ago. I'm sure he doesn't remember me. He doesn't remember me at all, but I remember him. He's short. I tower over the man, but he towers over me in terms of his intellect and the wonderful sense of compassion and history that he brings to his reports. I think his book, The Greatest Generation, is one of the greatest books ever written because it honors the people who really changed this world and saved this world, I think, and made it what it is today.
We had Emory as a guest, who's doing great for the DMC now.
Yes,
great.
He is, absolutely.
And he grew up in the Grosse Pointe of the suburbs of Chicago, Gary, Indiana. Another person we had on was the king, Bill Bonds.
Bill Bonds. Why? Bill Bonds. Look, the first day I arrived here to look for a new house, I was in a hotel room, and I got a call from Mr. Antonetti, Steve Antonetti, saying, turn on the news, sir. It's 5 o'clock. Turn on Channel 7. What was that? He says, Bill Bonds. You got to see him. Bill Bonds comes on the air, And he says, "Hello, Detroit. It's great to be back, and it's great to be sober." What? That's the first time I'd ever seen him, and this is what he's... I could not believe it. I had never seen an anchor do that. But by the same token, Bill Bonds had a rapport with his viewers that is unequaled, unmatched. And I had a chance to work with him when he left Channel 7, or when 7 left him. Bill came to Channel 2 for a while and worked for us, and he was simply a joy to watch. Now, Bill and I have had our disputes on occasion, but I still think, without question, he is one of the greats, if not the greatest broadcaster in Detroit history.
You've met phenomenal people worldwide. Were there one or two that were really special?
Well, without question. Back in 1986-87, I had a chance to travel with Pope John Paul as he went across the country. And I think I have never met someone so sure in his faith. And yet, a man who is the leader of the Catholic Church, the Universal Church, and yet a man who loved poetry, who loved music, sports. And people don't realize that the Pope spent some years here in Detroit before he was elevated to the position of the pontiff. So he knew several languages. I was impressed by his breadth of knowledge and by his acceptance of people who did not share his faith, but people that he nonetheless saw as children of God. No matter who they were, no matter what they believed, we were all one, all a part of the same holy family that is the human race.
One more special?
Of course, for me, that would be Nelson Mandela. And again, I'm this reporter who gets a chance to travel with a man who was the best example of leadership that I have seen in my lifetime. Can you imagine being in prison for 27 years and being released from prison and not giving in to hatred for the people who put you behind bars? Nelson Mandela embodied the rejection of revenge that I think poisons so much of what goes on in this world, that we all seek revenge and retribution for the evil that has been done to us. But Nelson Mandela said, no, we won't have that. When he came out, his focus was reestablishing South Africa, not as a country where whites dominated the majority black population, but as a country that embraced all people, that embraced all ethnic groups. And thanks to Nelson Mandela, South Africa thrives as a country today.
For his inauguration, he invited the guards from the prison and gave them a special spot.
Isn't that amazing? And to think that he was right here in Detroit. It was a wonderful, inspiring trip across the country, a wonderful, inspiring night here in Detroit.
Two special Detroiters.
Two special Detroiters. Oh, my. In addition to the two I've just named, Emory and Bill, I would think that Eleanor Joseitis is just, again, a saint on earth. She is an example of courage and perseverance, hope. She is a woman who nearly lost her family. People don't realize that when Eleanor Joseitis and Father Cunningham decided to start Focus Hope, people in her own family almost tried to disown her, tried to take away her children. She was preaching equality. She was preaching the need for whites and blacks to work together, for whites to reach out to blacks, to heal the racial divide. But so many did not want to hear, did not want to follow her lead. But you see today that Focus Hope is a beacon of hope for so many people. I can think of Reverend Faith Fowler, who is in that same mold, very much so, who is doing such good work in the Cass Corridor. And they're just absolutely wonderful, wonderful people. And, you know, there are just so many. That there are at least two or three or four dozen that I could possibly go through.
Coleman Young.
Coleman Young. My introduction to Coleman Young as a young reporter, I asked him a question about some budget issue. And his response was, "Who the blank are you?" You asked me that question. But I felt I'd been baptized. I had been baptized in the responses of Coleman Young, and I didn't get to know him well, but I did get to do several one-on-one interviews with him, including one interview shortly before he passed away in his apartment. And I was impressed by his intelligence. You know, I think people in Detroit tend to blame Coleman Young for almost everything that went wrong. And I think that's the wrong way to look at it. As Coleman Young points out in his book, his autobiography, the exodus, the white flight, the middle class flight from Detroit started to occur long before he took office. It, of course, accelerated in 1967 after the violence in the streets. But it had started long before he took office, and it continues even now as we speak. I think that perhaps he could have used some other language in some other time. But understand, too, that for many people, and I understand, for many African-Americans, he was a champion. He was someone who stood up for their rights. Because, as in Baton Rouge, although Detroit was not as segregated, perhaps, as Baton Rouge, although you didn't have signs saying colored only or white only here in Detroit, you still had in Detroit extreme racial segregation. And many say you still have it today. So Coleman Young should not be looked on as the villain in all this, but rather as someone who did his best based on his circumstances and his life and his ability, did his best to do what he could while he was here.
We're talking to Huel Perkins, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to the senior anchor at Fox 2 WJBK News, Huel Perkins. Huel, you're the epitome of class and grace. How do I get those?
Jack, are you sure you're seeing the same thing I'm seeing?
Amen.
No, I would say that you are. You know, I don't consider myself that. I really don't. What you see in me is certainly a byproduct of the way I was raised by my mother and father. My father is grace and eloquence personified. My father is eloquent. My father is inspiring. And I hope in some small measure to bring some of that to what I do on the air. But when I look at myself, I'm a mere approximation of the giants on whose shoulders I stand. When I leave television, I'm going to go into teaching, because my father and mother showed me through their example that teaching is the most noble profession. And I hope to bring some of that passion and eloquence to the classroom. But I don't think I'm at all as you describe me. I'm just somebody who is looking for the truth, trying to get to what's true, and to present information to the viewers in a way that they understand, and to present information that is useful to them in their daily lives so that they can improve those lives, make their lives better.
In the June 2006 issue of African American Family, the feature article was A Father's Influence, and your sons were on the cover. Priscilla and you have two sons, 16 and 13, and you say, quote, "We have discussions every morning about life and living." What are the main discussions you're teaching your sons?
The central lesson that I teach my sons every day is that they can have anything, they can do anything, they can be anything they want if they work for it. You must work for what you want in life, and your goals must include not only things for yourself, but things that improve mankind. I joke with my kids every morning, "All right, kids, time to go out and conquer the world." And We laugh about that, not in the sense that, you know, we're not trying to conquer the world. Maybe North America, but no, not the world. But we are trying to instill in them a sense that anything is possible and that they must live their lives caring about each other, caring about their place in the world, and caring about other people in the world, that they must share the gifts that they have been given with their greater community. And I ask them all the time, do you know how blessed you are? Do you know? And they tell me, yeah, and I hope that they do, because they have been given a head start. They have been given a head start in life because of what my mother and father gave me and because of what Priscilla and I can give them. And so they must use that head start to go out and make the world better for everyone.
Your roots are in Baton Rouge. Your heart and soul is still in a Cajun country. Explain to us what the Saints winning the Houdat, the Super Bowl, after 43 years, what does that mean to the people of Louisiana?
It is just so wonderful. It's like a great weight has been lifted, especially in the wake of Katrina. Baton Rouge is only 90 miles northwest of New Orleans. I've got family in New Orleans. My wife's family lost their homes, didn't lose their lives, and that's wonderful, thank God. But they lost their homes. Many of them lost their jobs. Many of them are only returning now to New Orleans. And the city is not what it was before Hurricane Katrina. And there was a moment in time when the damage in that city was so bad, they thought they were going to tear down the Superdome. It was on the brink. And for New Orleans, after 4 decades, to have a team like the Saints to win the Super Bowl is a fantastic bit of uplifting news that we need. I don't know if you've ever been to Mardi Gras, Jack, but it's a wonderful, marvelous party. And this year, we had 2 Mardi Gras. We had the Victory Parade of the Houdat Nation. And by the way, Houdat means, Houdat, talk about beating those Saints, if you understand what that means. And we had the Victory Parade, the first Mardi Gras, and then we had another Mardi Gras, the real Mardi Gras that comes right before Lent. And again, huge celebration. So good for the city. And maybe it means that we're on the road back to where we once were.
Talking about a dynasty, this Fox TV, Robert Murdoch, Roger Ailes.
Rupert Murdoch, yes.
Rupert, I'm sorry. Explain that.
Well, you know, it's hard to explain to people on the outside. People look at the Fox News Channel, and they think that the quote-unquote fair and balanced reporting that you see on the Fox News Channel, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, by the way, is representative of everything that Rupert Murdoch does and is representative or symbolic of who he is. And it is not. Rupert Murdoch is a great businessman. And he believes that all points of view should be aired. He found a niche market. He found a viewership hungry for a certain perspective that was not being delivered by quote-unquote mainstream media. Now, Rupert Murdoch does not necessarily believe everything he puts out on the Fox News Channel. People don't realize that Rupert Murdoch raised money for Democrat Hillary Clinton in her run for the presidency. People don't realize that Rupert Murdoch donates money to other causes, not all of them conservative, many of them liberal causes. He is a man who believes that it's important to air many different opinions, a diversity of opinions. The Fox News station here in Detroit, I think, has a very different editorial bent than the Fox News Channel. We are certainly much more liberal in our views, I think, than you would find if you turned on the cable news channel right now. But Rupert does not interfere editorially with anything we do. He simply requests that we do our best as journalists and try to tell the truth as best we know it, because objectivity is a goal. No one is truly objective in the news business. Every reporter, every anchor brings his or her perspectives, experiences to any story that he or she reports. That's unavoidable. And so it's important for viewers to realize that they must get their news from a variety of sources, not just one channel, not just one station, not just one newspaper, but read as many newspapers as possible, look at an issue, and look at many different stations to form your own opinion. And Rupert has parlayed this into a mega empire. Not only does he own the Fox News channel, but he's got satellite TV systems across the world. And I think you'd be surprised at what kind of man he really is.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
The same thing I tell my young sons, that you can do anything, be anything, have anything if you work for it. But that work is the key ingredient to success. Work is the key ingredient to making your life what you want it to be. Set a goal. Set a goal, chart your path, and do everything you can to reach that goal. That means, bottom line, hard work. Read as much as you can about what you want to know. Do as much as you can. Get involved early in the field that you see as your life's calling. I think as a young man, Jack Krasula, you're successful in part because you knew early on that there was something about the IT industry that you knew would spell success for you. You didn't know where it would lead. You didn't know it would make you a very successful businessman. But you knew early on that somehow, some way, I'm going to make it in this field. And you did. And so that's the bottom line. Seize the opportunity. Seize the day. Go for it with all your heart and soul, and it shall be yours.
Huel Perkins, thanks not just for what you do, but more importantly, how you do it. Keep making your mom and dad proud.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.